and create some good causes. But what I'd like to do now is kind of open it up, and you can ask some questions, we can have some discussion. Yeah.
I have all these desires for lots of things. Like daily. Of course, I don't notice that there are such, you know, compulsive desires until I try to stop, you know, and then it's like this screaming child in the head with the stomping feet, it's like, but I want it, you know. So to subdue these desires, to do that, it's like I need to show compassion for others, and that will kind of subdue these desires, but to show compassion for others is to basically not want them to go through any suffering, like have the absence of suffering. But before I can do that, I have to first take care of my own self-centered issues.
I think there's about 10 questions in there.
I don't know. It kind of moves around.
Okay.
It wasn't quite clear, like, exactly how do you show, like, because if you don't want other people to go through suffering, and then you were even mentioning some things that are, that they like, that are good, are kind of going to end up in resulting in suffering because they're not going to be permanent things in their lives. So it's like somebody comes up and it's like, I won these tickets to a rock show, and it's like, oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. So, I'm not sure if I can answer all 15 of your questions. Okay. But you're kind of asking, you know, how what are some basic steps to start to take, you know? Okay. So, in terms of subduing our own desires, you know, because he was saying that this mind that's just screaming, I want it, and give it to me, you know, how to subdue that. One thing that I find very effective with that mind is I'll sit down and I'll, in my mind, play out the whole little scene of me getting whatever my mind is wanting. And I'll play out the whole scene in my mind, and here it is, and it's so wonderful. And then I'll say to myself, and now am I permanently, everlastingly happy? And then, no. Then, let's relax. Don't have to struggle for that happiness so much. Yeah. Let's just relax. And then to try and instead create some contentment. So contentment is very un-American. Yeah? Because our society functions on discontent. Why, you know, we are no longer people, we are consumers. And what is the foremost thing you need to create in the mind of a person to be a good consumer is discontent. Okay? So we are getting messages all the time that what we have is not enough, what we do is not good enough, and who we are is not good enough. And we need to, like, you know, I think one of the big things to cultivate contentment is stop watching television and stop watching the ads on your computer. And stop reading the stuff in the magazines and stop looking at the pictures of the models in the magazines. You know, because all of that is just imprinting us with incredible messages that we're not good enough. You know? And then that just creates so much of the emotional turmoil that creates that child inside that says, but I want. Okay? So it's the process of just learning to say to ourselves, you know, what I have is good enough. You know, at first that sounds funny. Because, well, wait a minute, how can I say what I have good is good enough when somebody else has more and better? But if we really think what we have is good enough, we have a place to sleep, we have some friends, we have food, we're a lot better off than most of the people on this planet. Okay. So instead of looking at the glass being half full, impactful. I'm getting it confused. Anyway, instead of looking at what all the stuff we don't have, let's look at what we do have and say how fortunate I am. How fortunate I am. Yeah. And then instead of thinking, oh, but so many these other people, they do so much more than me, they're so much more successful, to be able to say, but look what I've done. Yeah? I'm not the best one in the world, but I'm not the worst one in the world. And I have some talents and some abilities, and I'll use those to benefit others and be content with that. Okay? So really doing a little bit of reflection on learning to accept ourselves for who we are and seeing our good qualities and making that determination to use our talents and good qualities for the benefit of all beings. Yeah. Instead of comparing ourselves to others where we always come out as poor quality. Okay. So I think that's one way. Another thing that I think, another meditation that's very, very effective, I think, for creating a sense of well-being in our life and subduing that crying baby mind. And this meditation is also very good it's a preliminary for cultivating compassion, is to think about how much kindness we have received from others. Okay. We don't spend much time thinking about the kindness we've received from others. Because we have our computer file of everything we've done wrong. You know, that's the one that we keep on making more and more entries into. But the file of the kindness I received for others, we often, you know, ignore that one. And I think it's quite important to sit down and repeatedly think about the kindness others have shown us. And start out with the kindness of our parents. I know people in America, but Freud said my parents were the cause of all my suffering. You know? Yeah, I mean, we're so hung up on blaming our parents for everything. And I think blaming our parents for our problems is the cause of our suffering. Yeah, not our parents. Our parents aren't the cause of our suffering. I mean, our parents gave us this life. What incredible kindness. Yeah, they aren't the cause of our suffering. It's our own demanding mind that is focused on blaming our parents that causes our misery. Okay, but if we look at, you know, our parents gave us this body. They kept us alive when we were infants. They woke up at 2 o'clock in the morning for 2 years repeatedly to feed us. I mean, just think about that. Would you wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning repeatedly to feed somebody? If I moved up into your house and woke up every night once or twice crying, would you feed me? I don't think so. Yeah? But that's exactly what our parents did for us when we were infants. You know, they woke up and they fed us. And they took care of us. Yeah? And they changed our diapers, and they taught us to walk, and they taught us to talk, and they sent us to school, and they had to discipline us and teach us some manners, which I don't think was very much fun for them. They had to endure the time when we were teenagers. Yeah? I mean, think of what you put your parents through when you were a teenager. My goodness, yeah? So, you know, just reflecting a little bit on the kindness, just starting with our family, and then thinking of the kindness of our teachers, you know, our elementary school teachers, our high school teachers. You know, thinking of the kindness of our friends, thinking of the kindness of all the people who work on the roads. Yeah. Do you ever think of the kindness of the people who work on the roads? I heard there's two seasons in Madison. Yeah, winter and construction. They don't, you know, but do we ever stop when you're driving on the road and thank the construction workers? Yeah, do we ever say thank you to the garbage collectors? There's so many people whose efforts we've benefited from who we just take for granted. But when we really spend some time instead considering about everything we've received from them, then we begin to see that we've been the recipient of a tremendous amount of kindness. And that, you know, holding that in our hearts, create, you know, really makes that sense of contentment much more stable, and it really decreases this very bratty mind, you know, that says, I want, gimme. Yeah? So that's very, very helpful. Okay? And then the thing about the way compassion works, yeah, to help us cut down on that mind of, you know, I want, is because I want is me, the center of the universe, isn't it? Yeah? And so to look at everybody else, look at the other beings in our life, you know, not just our friends and family, but look at strangers, look at the people that we don't like. What's it like to be them? Yeah? Think about the people who have harmed us and how unhappy they are. Do we ever spend time thinking about how unhappy the people who harmed us are? Well, we just think about how mean they are. But if you think about it, they're unhappy because that's why they did things that were harmful. Yeah. So if we start turning our focus to other living beings and seeing what's going on in their life and just seeing how maybe we can be a participant in spreading some joy in their lives, then that, you know, takes our energy off of that mind that's always whining and complaining and grasping and clinging. Yeah?
Comment maybe from personal experience about things the layperson can do in their own practice to nurture things to turn into that awakening origin. So,
So you're saying what can lay people do in their daily lives to turn themselves away from this feeling of discontent? Okay. I found for myself this meditation on the kindness of others is very, very important. Okay? Really spending a lot of time thinking about everything I've received from other living beings, from friends and family, from strangers, even the kindness I've received from enemies. I find that meditation is a tremendously healing meditation. It's one that I did not want to do at the beginning of my practice. Okay? When I first heard about the kindness of my parents, I was gone. And then, you know, the kindness of enemies, I was going, forget it, you know, and meditate on the kindness. Why should I meditate on the kindness when the world hasn't been good enough to me? And that was my initial reaction. But again, you know, my teachers kept teaching it, and I thought, maybe they know more than I do. Maybe I should try following their advice. Maybe. And so I found that as I did, that this meditation had a very, very strong impact on me. Yeah, very strong impact. Yeah. And made me really see how much incredible fortune I have and how much kindness I've received. And, you know, to complain, you know, if I start to remember, you know, if I start to remember this meditation when I'm in my complaining mood, it cuts the complaints out right away. Because what I see is all around me, there's just been incredible kindness. Amazing kindness. I mean, because I look, you know, everything I know, where did it come from? Didn't come from me. I wasn't born knowing everything. I didn't even know how to speak. I wasn't even toilet trained. You know, everything I know came due to others. Every single thing I know, everything I do all day long that I take for granted, how to hold a cup and bring it to my mouth, how to talk to other people, how to wave my hand and smile, everything was learned from others. every talent I might have or every ability I might have is because other people taught me. So when I really think about this, you know, you begin to see, my goodness, there's so much kindness in this world. So much kindness. And that creates that sense of contentment and cuts down on the discontent. And then based on seeing the kindness of others, then it makes generating love and compassion for them much easier. Okay? Because we can't will ourselves or tell ourselves to have love and compassion for everybody. I mean, we can, but it doesn't do any good. Okay? You know, I should love everybody. Well, I don't. Yeah? I don't know anybody who does. So, you know, well, actually, no, I do. But, you know, my teachers do. But, you know, I can't make myself have love and compassion for others. But one of the steps, you know, that the Buddha taught for generating love and compassion is this meditation on seeing the kindness of others. Okay? Because when we see others' kindness, then we see them as lovable. Okay? When we see others' kindness to us, then automatically a sense of affection comes in our mind. Yeah? When there's affection in our mind, there's a feeling of connection. There's a wanting to connect and to do something for that person. Just because we want to repay what they've given to us. Not because we want them to like us. Not because we want them to give us a present. Not because we want them to think that we're wonderful so we have a good reputation. You know, because they've already given so much to us, and so we're just kind of doing the natural human thing of giving something back. Okay? So then, like I said, that having that love and compassion comes much easier. Yeah?
What has done with TV and a lot of stuff in the media that is a lot of drama and a lot of creation of, like, it seems like a lot of fear is created, and a lot of images are put forth in stories of, like, murderers and people who have no compassion and are really terrible and monstrous. So, like, not human behavior. So, I mean, that's the way it's almost pictured. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and I'm a when you get to that, a lot of that stuff too, even like a lot of the wars, it seems to really totally create this villain, this bad entity that has to be fought against.
Yeah. So you're saying that the media creates a very much an us and them thing, and the them are really bad people who we're supposed to be afraid of, and the best method to be afraid of them, or the best thing to do if you're afraid of them, is either lock them in prison or drop bombs on them. Yeah? And I agree. I mean, this is kind of what the media sends out. And I've talked to people in the media, and, you know, because I say, well, the media is creating how we think in the country. And the people that I know in the media say, no, we're just giving the people what they want. So I think it's this two-way thing that we get a certain hit out of the drama of violence. I mean, look at the movies that people go to for entertainment. They either have sex or they have violence. Okay, we find violence entertaining. Isn't that amazing? Yeah. And 9/11 would have been a box office sellout if it had been a movie. And weren't we all riveted to the television? Yeah. So I think we have to also look inside of ourselves. And why do we get such a rush out of seeing violence? You know, what is it in us that buys into this fear? And I think, you know, when there's fear, there's a big adrenaline rush, isn't there? You know, so physiologically we get some kind of hit. And then our mind, you know, kind of wakes up. And what I think is also happening is our self-grasping ignorance is really at its high point when we have fear. Yeah. Because what's the object of that fear? Me. You know, what are we grasping onto when we're afraid? Me. You know, it's terror that something will happen to me. So there's this incredible eye grasping at that time. And so it just feeds into that whole thing, physiologically, mentally, and we feel, oh, I must exist if I can be afraid. Yeah, because the last thing ego wants to do is not exist. Yeah, so fear gives it some existence. There I am. Yeah. And so I think we have to do some research in our own mind. You know, why do I like watching violence? Why do I like to watch other people making love? You know, why do I like to watch other people living their lives? Yeah? I mean, do you ever watch a television program about somebody watching TV? No. You know, you don't watch a program about somebody watching TV because somebody watching TV is boring. Then why do we do it? Why do we spend so much time, you know, watching TV when we have our own life to live and so many interesting things we can do? So I think we need, it's kind of going to be a withdrawal process because we are totally, you know, hooked on the TV and the internet, on, you know, the movies, all of that stuff. And I think it's very bad for mental health, I think. Yeah.
What about the child who hasn't watched TV and hasn't done internet and who now is 11 and all she wants to do is just be like her friend and get that currency and wants to be playing stupid games on the internet? You don't let me watch TV and you don't let me do this and you don't let me do that. Even though you have such a full life, give her other alternatives, but it's so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
All she wants to do.
Yeah. It is. It is. And I think we need to really No, just give up, Kathy. I just think we do the best we can and explain to them why we have the values that we have. All you can do is the best you can. And I think really showing people how living your own life is far more interesting. Mm-hmm.
Would you please try to speak to how to differentiate the source or the nature of desire and separating good desire for living, running the Dharma and living a compassionate life versus bad desire?
Okay, that's a good question. So, how do you separate good desire from bad desire? Because the word desire in English is a very tricky word, and sometimes it's used as a translation, you know, like you should abandon all desire. And then we get very confused because we have good desires. Yeah. So I don't think using the word desire is a really good translation, you know, in Buddhist thing. Because then you think, you know, oh, you've abandoned all desires. Okay, so then the Buddhist just sits there and goes, duh. You know, that's your seed syllable, duh. that's not it, okay? But to see, you know, the kind of desire that makes the mind unsubdued, that torments the mind, is this desire for external things, thinking that our happiness is going to come from material possessions, from money, from praise and approval, from reputation, from good sense pleasure. That kind of craving for that kind of pleasure, yeah, that is the kind of desire that just leads to dissatisfaction again and again and again and again. Okay? But the kind of desire that we want to increase is a positive aspiration. Okay? So I aspire to be a kinder person. now. I aspire to recognize the kindness of others. I aspire to live a more ethical life. I aspire to cultivate contentment. Okay. I aspire to establish a regular daily meditation practice. Yeah? I aspire to not watch so much television. Yeah? Whatever it is. Those kinds of aspirations are a good kind of desire, because we're seeing what's beneficial and steering our energy in that direction, and that's very, very helpful for ourselves. Hmm? Yeah.
When we talk about happiness and being able to find happiness, not in yourself, I'm wondering if you could talk about how to do that without feeding the big pile, turning that inward without feeding the
meal. Okay, so I'm not sure if I understand your question. You're saying if we want to cultivate internal happiness instead of looking for external things, how do we do that without enhancing the self-centeredness? Okay. By seeing that the self-centeredness is what destroys our happiness. Okay. There's a whole meditation on the disadvantages of self-centeredness. And the more we begin to look in our lives, the more that we see that this unhealthy self-centeredness, it makes us miserable now, and it makes us engage in actions that create the cause for future misery. Okay? So we have to, the big trick in this is to see that the conventional self and our self-centeredness are not union oneness. They're two separate things, okay? So we are not our self-centeredness. This is extremely important, okay? We are not our self-centeredness. Our self-centeredness is just an attitude that comes in the mind, that takes over the mind, but it is not who we are, and it is not our basic nature. Okay? So we have to really get that clear in our mind. Then if we do, we can look at the self-centeredness. You put self-centeredness out here, and you watch how self-centeredness whispers in your ear all day long. You know, follow me. I'll tell you the way to be happy. Go buy this. You know, go, there's Prince Charming. Go talk to him. You know, do this, do that. You know, and how self-centeredness is like just whispering in our ear all the time. You're right. The other person's wrong. Go tell them off. And how we look at self-centeredness and we're so foolish that we just salute self-centeredness and say, aye, aye, sir. You know? And we do. Well, self-centeredness teaches us. And we're miserable afterwards. Okay? So we have to, like, become really wise and say, wait a minute, you know, you've been giving me all these orders, and you're the one who's been making the mess out of my life. Because every time I follow you, self-centeredness, what you're telling me to do, I get more problems, and I'm more unhappy, and I do things that make other people miserable. Okay? So then you turn, and when self-centeredness starts acting up, you say, shut up! This is not the time. With self-centeredness, you are not polite. Yeah, you don't say, dear self-centeredness, please calm down. You know, because self-centeredness is not going to listen to that. Yeah, you have to learn. So shut up. Yeah. Yeah.
What about, like, if you consider it self-centeredness, like, if you're
Okay.
Is that the same thing?
Okay. So when you're saying when you're getting depressed, when you're having a pity party and feeling bad about yourself, you can see that self-centeredness is being very active at that time. But if you turn on it and say shut up, then you feel worse about yourself. Okay? Well, you're feeling worse about yourself because you're not really convinced that self-centeredness is the enemy. But, okay, if you're not totally ready to see self-centeredness as the enemy, then sometimes looking at yourself and saying, wow, I'm really under the sway of my own self-centeredness right now, you know, and have some compassion for yourself for being under the sway of your self-centeredness. Okay? In other words, my self-centeredness is making me miserable, but I can't really drop it right now. Yeah? So I just have to accept where it is right now and do my best to get out of it. There's one meditation called the taking and giving meditation that's very, very good to do at that time. Okay? Where we imagine taking on others' suffering and using it to smash our self-centeredness and sending out our love and compassion and giving joy to others. It's a very good meditation to do at that time. But, it's very tricky because if we say, oh, I'm depressed and feeling lousy because I'm so self-centered, poor me, I'm the most self-centered person in the world. Nobody else is as self-centered as I am. I can't really even get rid of my own self-centeredness even though I know it's tormenting me. You see, then we're just indulging the whole thing. Yeah. Okay. No, I didn't say it's not okay to be experiencing pain and unhappiness. There's no judgment on that. What we feel is what we feel. It's not an issue of is it okay or isn't it okay. We feel what we feel. The question is, do we want to enhance that feeling or do we want to apply the antidote to it? Okay? So we don't judge ourselves for feeling what we feel. You know, you're angry, you're spiteful, you're resentful. Don't judge yourself. But just say, is this, you know, an emotion that I want to cultivate? Or is this an emotion that brings unhappiness for myself and others? Okay. Let's sit quietly for a couple of minutes. This is a very short meditation. I call it digestion meditation. Okay? So in this meditation, just think about some of the points that you heard tonight and think about them so that you can apply them to your life and so that you'll remember them when you leave tonight. Just be very short.